So those of you who've been here for the last few weeks, you may recall earlier in my sermon series on the book of Mark, how I told you all that it's important as we read Mark to pay attention to location. Pay attention to the places where things happen. Not just what happens, but pay attention to where things happen, because place really does matter in Mark's gospel. I'll give you some examples. Houses in the Gospel of Mark, they're not just homes for families, but they're really like these safe spaces for reflection and renewal and recharge. And so you see Jesus kind of going out into the cities, going out and doing ministry, battling against evil spirits, all this stuff, but then often he'll retreat, and the disciples will retreat into homes to get away. The synagogue or the temple, you know, they're not just religious places for worship in Mark, but for Mark, he sees these places as a primary place of conflict for Jesus, and even is drawing out that there was some oppression going on in some of these synagogues and even in the temple in Jerusalem. The wilderness for Mark is not just a beautiful and rustic place outside of town, but the wilderness is this place that's really outside of the halls of power, where the poor, where they organize and they connect, and really where this Jesus revolution finds its beginnings and its power. The sea or the lake, when you read about in Mark, it's not just a place to fish or to go on a ride on a boat, you know, it's a place really of struggle, of boundary breaking, of fear. So when you see the sea crossings, they often encounter storms when they're crossing these seas, because it's seen really as a boundary marker between different groups of people. And so it's a place of struggle. Today we're going to talk about another place, and it's a bit more abstract maybe than the other places in Mark, but I think it's really the most important, and that is the way. We're going to talk about the way. Now the way is kind of a road or a path that leads from one place to another. But for Mark, that's not all the way is. The way has a deeper meaning. For Mark, the way is really the place of discipleship. It is where you find disciples. You find disciples of Jesus on the way. So the question for today that we're going to try to wrestle with a little bit is, are you on the way? Are you on the way with Jesus? Jesus called ordinary people like you and like me to follow him. That was his invitation. His invitation was not, hey, come believe in me, or come here, learn about all these doctrines about God and come be a part of my community. No, his invitation was to follow him. And literally, these people that he called, they dropped what they were doing and they followed Jesus, literally along paths and roads from town to town, from place to place. They didn't have vehicles. They would walk from place to place. They were on the move, literally, on the move with Jesus. Though as they were moving around on these paths, something deeper was happening. Not only were they literally following Jesus around from place to place, but they were also learning to follow a new way of life. Jesus was teaching them through his example. Their discipleship was not learning about doctrines about God. Maybe they learned some of that, but it was really a school on the road. They were learning a new way of life, a new way of being and acting and working in this violent and messed up world. Jesus was a really good teacher. He knew that he needed to model for his students how they ought to live in this world. Beginning in chapter 8 of Mark, Christina pointed this out last week, that chapter 8 is really kind of a hinge point for Mark. We move into a new section. The Gospel of Mark in chapter 8, you start to notice the mood shifts a little bit. Starts to get a little darker. There's more conflict. There's more intensity. Jesus starts talking about some things that the disciples thought was a bit out there and too much. He starts to talk about how he's going to die, how he's going to suffer and be arrested and be tortured. He's saying some really hard things. The mood starts to change. And one thing Mark starts doing in this latter part of the gospel is he starts to be pretty hard on the disciples. If you look at Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, all about Jesus and the disciples, Mark is probably the hardest on the disciples out of all of them. Now, Mark was a follower of Jesus himself, and so maybe he felt like he could be hard on them because these were his people. But Mark is very clear that the disciples did not get it right very often, and that they had lots of failures and lots of misunderstandings. Christina talked about that for us last week as well. And in these chapters, Mark begins to make something, I believe, really clear, that staying on the way with Jesus is really, really hard. It's not easy to stay on the way with Jesus. You know, Jesus told a parable about this very thing that we read about in the first part of Mark, in Mark chapter 4, the parable of the sower. Do y'all know this parable? It's a really profound and deep parable that we could wrestle with for a long time, but I just want to mention it. In this parable, the farmer in the story goes and scatters seed along the path. Some of the seed fell beside the way. Other seed fell among the rocky soil. Some fell among the thorns, and some fell in good soil and was able to take root and grow. And the parable is meant to teach us about the obstacles to discipleship, the things that get in the way and prevent us from following the way of Jesus. And then we fast forward to chapters 8 through 16, and we're given real life examples of what these obstacles are that Jesus was talking about. We see examples of actual people who seem to be snatched up from beside the way, like this story of Satan snatching up this seed from beside the way. We see examples of shallow faith that's been sown in rocky soil. We see examples of wealth choking out the commitment to follow Jesus' call. We see many obstacles that lead the disciples to mess up and to fall away and get off track. And I wonder for you all, like, as you think about it, what obstacles do you face when trying to stay on the way of Jesus? You know, a continuing conversation we have here at our church as leaders, we've been talking about this for years, is how our community can help each other grow as disciples. We are I think we do a great job at welcoming people in. It doesn't matter who you are, we're gonna welcome you into this church. But we're always trying to discern and figure out together how we can help each other grow into actual disciples of Jesus. Not just believers in Jesus, but disciples who are following in his way. Some of you have even mentioned to us that you want to be discipled and you're looking for that in your life. You know, in some faith traditions, when someone like wants to become a Christian or get involved, they'll have kind of a catechism or a confirmation kind of thing that they go to through where they learn usually about kind of all the doctrines of the faith. They'll learn about all the different beliefs about the church, about salvation, about sin, about humanity, about the world, all these different kind of big, heavy concepts about the church. And you really learn the beliefs of your particular denomination or congregation. And at the end, when you feel like you've kind of gotten through it all, then you join the church or you make that profession of faith. I know students who've been through a Catholic version of this, and they were quizzed at the end. They had to take an actual test, basically, to say that they understood the doctrines and the beliefs of their church. In the United Methodist Church, young people often go through something called confirmation. And then they make a public profession of faith after they're finished. And I think about Mark's catechism or Mark's discipleship class. I think it would look a little bit different than what we do today. And that's one of our challenges here as we figure this out, because we want to be more than just teaching people the stuff in the head. But we want us all to like be able to grow and become actual disciples. For Mark, you don't learn to be a disciple through studying doctrines in a classroom. For Mark, a disciple must learn along the way. It's a traveling school on the road, learning by listening and studying, but also by doing and practicing your faith. The invitation Jesus offered to people was not only to believe in him, but the invitation was to come and follow, to come and watch and learn along the way. In chapter 8 of the Gospel of Mark, Jesus asked Peter a very important question. He says, Peter, who do you say I am? And Peter responds with an important confession of faith. He says, you are the Messiah. I mean, this is big. This is the first time they had said something like this. And Peter, he had 8 chapters, and that covers a lot of time with Jesus, that he had learning about Jesus, and he became to this fundamental belief about Jesus, that Jesus is the long-awaited Messiah. Good job, Peter. Way to go. You got it. Or did he get it right? We're not sure, because if you read later, we're going to get into it. Peter shows us just a few moments later that he still had a lot to learn. Jesus then tells his disciples that he must suffer and eventually he is going to be killed. Now, this was big news for the disciples. They had a hard time accepting this. No one would have expected that their Messiah was going to be killed and suffer this quickly. They were looking for a revolution, something to really change their existence in this world. They were reflecting probably on the Maccabees and these warriors that came before them, and they wanted their Messiah probably to be like that. They were hoping for a rise to power. And so when Peter hears Jesus say this, that he's going to suffer and die, Peter intervenes, he pulls Jesus aside and rebukes Jesus for saying such things. I don't know. I think Jesus is very loving for sure, but I would be reluctant to rebuke Jesus like that. But Peter, he did, because he did not like the idea of a Messiah suffering. And Jesus did not want Peter trying to tell him what to do, because that was Jesus' job. So Jesus says something to Peter that shows clearly the correct place for a disciple. He says, get behind me, Satan. Now that's a really intense thing for Jesus to say to Peter. And these sound like harsh words. But what is happening here, I think, is exactly what the parable of the sower was warning against. Satan tries to subvert Peter's commitment to Jesus. Satan, in a way, wants Peter to be like the seed that fell beside the path and stay beside the way, maybe cheering Jesus on and saying kind and good things about Jesus, but not following Jesus all the way to the cross. Satan doesn't want Peter to submit to the way of Jesus. So Jesus rebukes Peter, and he reminds him of his place in the movement. Your job is to be behind me, Jesus says. Get behind me. Peter, your job is to follow me. I'm not here to follow your agenda or any agenda in this world. I've come to bring the agenda of the Father in heaven, and I need my followers to follow me along and trust me on this. Peter's confession that Jesus was the Messiah ultimately has no value or meaning if he's not willing to take up his cross and follow Jesus. To be a disciple of Jesus, I think, is less about the confession of faith and more about the imitation of Christ. It is less about the confession of faith and more about the imitation of Christ. It is less about admiring Jesus and more about following Jesus. In Mark chapter 10, we read about two men who were along the way. We hear this place of the way. One of them is a rich man who came to Jesus along the way. You may know this story. Some of the Gospels call him the rich young ruler. But this rich man was along the way. He came to Jesus. He admired Jesus. He thought Jesus was special. And he came to Jesus wanting to seek eternal life. And he admired Jesus. He said good things to him. But the rich man had a lot of wealth, and he owned many properties, while many people were suffering in poverty around him. Jesus loved this man, and he invited him to follow him. But the rich man refused because he wasn't willing to right his wrongs and share his wealth with the poor. He is like that seed thrown among the thorns that this parable tells us about. That the thorns or the wealth came around and choked him. It put a stranglehold on his faith and prevented him from being a faithful disciple. He admired Jesus but refused to follow Jesus. This is the only discipleship rejection story that we find in Mark. The second man that Jesus meets in chapter 10 along the way is a blind man who was outside of Jerusalem in the city of Jericho. Now, Jericho is kind of the last stop as you journey up towards Jerusalem if you're coming from that part, that way in the land. And so there was a long, kind of windy, dangerous path that led up to Jerusalem. And there were likely lots of beggars who would wait in Jericho because there were a lot of passerbys going to the city. And if you're going to the city, there's a good chance maybe you have more resources. So they're there asking for help. Hey, they knew the spot. Like, we need help. This is the place we're going to be. And so this blind man was there at this pass by, waiting for someone that could help him. He heard that this man, Jesus, was coming to the spot where he begged in Jericho. This man admired Jesus. He had lots of respect for Jesus. He knew Jesus had power. And he went to Jesus and he asked for help. And Jesus called him. And the man went to Jesus. He threw his possessions aside. His only possession was his cloak, and he was willing to give that up, contrasted to the wealthy man who couldn't give up any of his possessions, and he fell at Jesus' feet. Jesus healed him of his blindness and then also invited him into community to follow him along the road. Now, this man actually followed Jesus even when he knew that path up to Jerusalem was a dangerous path with possible violence. He followed anyway. He was a follower, not just an admirer of Jesus. Two very different stories in Mark. One man wanted to stand beside the way, learn from Jesus, admire him, but the other man radically reoriented his life around following the way of Jesus, even when that path potentially was leading to danger. Mark holds nothing back in his gospel, and I think I see it as pretty clear to me that to be a disciple is to follow Jesus on the way. Danish philosopher Soren Kierkegaard wrote this back in the 1800s, and he could not articulate this better. It is well known that Christ consistently used the expression follower. He never asked for admirers, worshipers, or adherents. No, he calls disciples. It is not adherents of a teaching, but followers of a life Christ is looking for. Jesus came to be the pattern, to leave footprints for the person who would join him, who would become a follower. The admirer never makes any true sacrifices. He always plays it safe. Though in words, phrases, songs, he is inexhaustible about how highly he prizes Christ. He renounces nothing, will not reconstruct his life, and will not let his life express what it is he supposedly admires. Not so for the follower. No, the follower aspires to be with all his strength what he admires. Jesus didn't ask people to worship him or to admire him. He called people to follow him. He showed them a way of life, a pattern for us to follow. I love that. Leaving footprints for those who want to follow and discover this new life, to follow this path he laid out. As followers, we are invited to reconstruct our life around Jesus in this boundary-breaking lifestyle of love. To confess Jesus as Lord and Messiah, to sing his praise and give him honor, it requires a commitment to follow the way of Jesus in tangible, loving ways in our public and our private lives. As Kierkegaard said, the follower aspires with all their strength to be what they admire. I want y'all to reflect just for a moment with me. Are you on the way with Jesus? Or perhaps you feel like you're more standing kind of beside the way, cheering Jesus on, but maybe you're reluctant to follow and to truly get behind Jesus and follow him on the path that he's laid out before you. I think that's a question we got to ask all the time, right? Because it's very tempting and we will always kind of fall off sometimes. Sometimes we get way off the path and we're not just standing beside. Maybe we've walked way far away. But I want y'all to reflect on, do you feel like you're on the way with Jesus? Are you trying to sit under his teaching and follow in his example? That's what we've been trying to do in the whole Gospel of Mark. This is really the essence of what Mark is all about. And the second question is, what obstacles are preventing you from following the way of Jesus in your day-to-day life? And sometimes we can identify the obstacles pretty easily, but then the next question is harder. What are you going to do about it? It's really hard to get to that point and say, well, I'm actually going to make some changes. And I struggle with that, and I know that all of you probably do as well. I love this idea of transforming initiatives. What transforming initiative can you make? Can you take to make a change? Like, what step do you need to take that could lead to transformation for yourself and potentially for others in your life? So I'll just leave that on the screen for just a moment as I start preparing for communion. And I just encourage you all to reflect on that just for a minute as we transition into our time of communion.